An 11-year-old child should never know the trauma of what occurred 7 Septembers ago. It was one day before spooky season, September 30th. I was babysitting my best friend's child, Dominic. I called him Dommy. I knew Dommy his whole life. I was even at the hospital when he was born. He called me Aunt Claire Claire, short for Clarissa. I kept him once before, but it was short-lived. He was struck with a stomach bug, and I ended up taking him home. This time though, Dommy was healthier and happier than ever, excited to stay with me. I lived in a small cottage-style home with 3 bedrooms. It was located at the end of a spacey cul-de-sac, giving me the privacy that I craved. Behind my house, beyond the wooden fence, was hundreds of acres of wooded area, making for quiet nights. Back then, I really loved quiet nights. I remember the smell of spaghetti as Dommy wolfed down 2 big bowls. I was really surprised at how much he ate. I was really proud that he loved my cooking, and even sent a boastful text to his mom. He settled down in his pajamas and curled up on the couch. It was about 9 p.m. when I sat next to him. I was a part-time student with a full-time job, so I was really exhausted. I looked at Dommy, and I asked, "Well, is it time for bed yet?" "Maybe for you," he responded in a sassy, playful voice. I had a real sweet spot for Dommy, and I still do. I allowed him to stay up a little bit longer, but I told him to be in bed by 10:30. He agreed, and he continued watching his show. Shortly after, I went to my room and cracked the door. As tired as I was, I probably fell asleep as soon as my head hit the pillow. I remember having a bad dream before Dommy woke me up by shaking my bed. He then let out an aggressive whisper, "Aunt Claire Claire, wake up." I was startled so badly that I let out a yelp. "Yeah, baby, what's wrong?" I asked. I'm hungry," he said. He sounded strange, almost like he was frightened. "Hungry?" I asked. "You ate 2 big bowls of spaghetti." "I know." He paused and looked at me with frightened eyes. "I want more." Looking back, I'm really ashamed to say that I was upset with him, and that I took an angry tone. No, I'm not a morning person, and certainly not a wake me up in the middle of night person. "Dommy, it's nearly midnight. You promised to be in bed. Call it a night and I'll make you some breakfast in the morning." I jerked the blankets and then rolled over, shutting my eyes. Not 10 seconds passed before he shook the bed again, whispering, "I really need a bowl of spaghetti, right now." I turned over, not believing how difficult he was being. He had never misbehaved like this and was always polite. I stared at him in disbelief. "Fine," I said, crawling out of bed. I walked with him through the dark house to the kitchen. Before we could make it to the fridge, he grabbed my wrist. He stared at me with tears in his eyes. His little body trembled and squatted down. "What's wrong, Dommy?" And he then whispered something that shook my core. "There's a man in your bedroom. He's under your bed."
"What? No,"
I said in disbelief. "No one's under my bed." "There is. I don't want him to know that I know. I had to get you in here." As Dommy finished a sentence, we then heard a rustling down the hallway. The noise coming from my room. We were both paralyzed in fear. We had no idea what to do. Dommy began crying, which boosted me into action. I scooped him up and unlocked the back door. I jetted and entered the pitch black backyard. Once I was out there holding Dommy, my heart dropped as I came to a realization. My cell phone was on the dresser next to my bed. As quickly as I could, I then ran with Dommy right through a side gate and into the front yard. I stubbed my toe on something. I can still remember how terribly it hurt, but I kept moving. I saw my destination down the street, my closest neighbor. The garage door was open, and I saw the silhouette of a man inside of it. It was the longest, most terrifying run of my life. There was nothing but blackness around me as my bare feet ran on the pavement. I almost expected to be tackled by the intruder that was inside my house, but I wasn't. I made it to my neighbor's house and called the police. The police came, lights and sirens. They checked inside my house, but they didn't find the intruder. They did, however, find that my bedroom window was wide open. The strange man likely fled into the woods after hearing Dami and I's conversation. To this day, I don't know who was under my bed or how or when they got there. For a really long time, I convinced myself that it was my crazy ex-boyfriend Drew from a few years back. But I changed my mind after running into Drew at an Olive Garden, where he then introduced me to his wife. I dream of different endings to my experience. Oftentimes I wake up in a trembling sweat because Dami and I were killed, violently. I don't sleep much anymore. Dami's mom and I aren't as close as we used to be. We only text when I ask how Dami's doing. She says that Dami still loves me, but he'll never, ever stay with me again. And I can't say I blame him. This happened.
When I was around 7 years old, my family and I moved into an old house. It was a really big house with 4 bedrooms, 6 bathrooms, 2 living rooms, and even had a dumbwaiter. It was at least 80 years old and was in pretty good condition for a house that old. My parents both worked 12-hour shifts at a hospital and would oftentimes have to get a sitter for me. My current babysitter, who I looked up to dearly, had moved away over 2,000 miles to another state to start her career in law. Needless to say, I wasn't doing well because of it. She had been with us for over 6 years and even considered her as family. Anyway, with her now gone, my parents had to look for a new babysitter. We had lived in a town where there weren't many sitters, meaning there was a better chance for them to have low reviews. Thankfully, we had found one who lived in walking distance that had 4-star reviews, which wasn't bad, but still convenient. Her name was Sandra, and she seemed really nice. She was 24, attended college, and was apparently really good with kids. We'd play games together, she'd help me with my homework, watch TV, etc. My parents got along well with her, and as the weeks went by with her as my new babysitter, I started to see her a lot like my previous one. While all of this was great for both my parents and I, something happened during a visit that would change my whole perspective of her. It was a Friday night, and my parents were on a weekend trip to the Bahamas for their anniversary, and I was with Sandra. She had bought me some pizza and sat down with me to watch SpongeBob to keep me company. We watch for about an hour or so before she tells me to get ready for bed. Now, I was never the rebellious type of kid, so I complied and went up to bed to go to sleep. I fall asleep almost instantly and probably slept for a good 2 hours or so when I woke up to a steady banging noise. It was pretty loud, especially from my room, and kind of sounded like someone hitting a hammer against a wooden door. I turn on my light and quietly tiptoe down the stairs to the living room where the noise was coming from. I descend into the living room where the light was on, and what I saw next will forever stay with me. Sandra had been facing the back door while forcefully hitting her head on it. On the floor was a small puddle of blood that was coming from her nose, as well as blood dripping down the door. Being only 7, I tried to process as to what I was seeing, but I was just simply petrified. I let out a loud scream across the house and got on the house phone to dial 911. I spoke with the operator, trying my best to describe what it was that I was seeing. All the while, I'm screaming at Sandra to please stop, but she didn't seem to care or acknowledge me. I'm still on the phone with the police, giving them my address and to please come as soon as possible. The police heard the banging in the background and arrived in minutes with three officers restraining Sandra. She tried to resist no matter what, leaving one of the officers with no choice but to tase her. They called for an ambulance and one of the officers called my parents, letting me know the situation. That night, my aunt came to stay with me at her house until my parents got back. As for Sandra, she had been rushed to the hospital where she regained consciousness and suffered from severe injuries. According to my parents, Sandra doesn't remember any of it or what had happened. All she remembered was her on the couch with her phone when she felt dizzy and got up until everything went black. Till this day, it's still unclear as to what had happened that day or what it was. Either way, it's one of the most horrifying encounters I've ever witnessed. This is a story that happened to me when I was around 24 years old. I recently moved to Boston for an internship to help prepare for my field of study since I had just graduated from school. However, it wasn't a paid internship, and the money I did make was from my disability insurance. This meant that I had to find a job in order to make income. After days of searching for jobs, I finally found one as a part-time babysitter. I was good with children, and figured babysitting wouldn't be bad for a first job. However, little did I know that those expectations were far from true. Ever since I had moved, I had babysat for a while now and have dealt with many different kids, but this kid takes the prize. I won't disclose personal information about her, but we'll call her Rachel. Rachel was around 9 and was the small blonde girl who was obsessed with dolls. She basically liked any type of dolls. Antique dolls, rag dolls, Barbie dolls, you name it. One time, I had babysat for her for 2 days as her parents would be out of town. She was nice, but wasn't very talkative, and just mainly played with her dolls and tended to them. I would be staying in the guest bedroom, and, of course, there were dolls. I remember this one porcelain doll sitting on a chair beside the bed I'd be sleeping in. It was a very unnerving doll. The type where it felt like you were being watched by it whenever you moved. I thought nothing of it and just got ready for bed and made sure Rachel was asleep. It was around 11 p.m. and I had got ready for bed and went to sleep with ease. I'd say I slept for a good hour or so before waking up to the sound of something in the room. I wake up and take a look at the clock and saw that it was 1 a.m. The second I turned on the light, I take a look around the room and see that the doll's head had been rotated backwards. Thinking it was probably Rachel pulling a joke, I turned the doll's head and went over to her room. However, Rachel seemed to be fast asleep and didn't seem like she had gotten out of bed. I shut her door and go back to my room, and the doll had now fallen off the chair. I didn't even dare touch it and just shut the door and slept on the couch. When morning came, I wasn't gonna bother Rachel with questions about the doll, so I ignored it and waited for the parents to arrive. I got paid and left the house and refused to babysit for Rachel again. When they did call me, I simply declined and claimed that I had gotten another job. I haven't experienced anything paranormal like that again, and I have moved past it. This story has shocked me to my core ever since, and I've even developed a fear of dolls. Whenever I see one, I always walk away. When I was about 11, my family and I moved into a new home in Los Angeles. It wasn't anything too big, just a one-storied home appropriate for a family of three. I attended a private school in the city and was a naturally socially awkward child. This will be important in the story later. I'd also like to mention that I have autism, meaning it was hard for me to make friends and interact with others. Both my parents were fully aware of this and had made me go through therapy and other medication to help me with it. While it did improve a little bit, I still had some challenges I had to deal with. Anyway, we had moved to Cali as my dad had other work there with a higher salary. This meant that he'd most of the time be working and not at the house. I mean, my mom would sometimes watch over me, but she worked too and would sometimes have to get a babysitter. My current babysitter, who I adored, had recently moved over 2,000 miles away for a better job. It was sad, but that was the reality, and we had to find another sitter. Eventually, my mom had found me a new sitter who wasn't like the old one, but was still manageable. Her name was Luna, and she claimed to be just 19 years old. She was nice, but had a few issues that I began to take notice from for the first few visits. While it wasn't anything too concerning, they were very much noticeable. At first, it was relatively minor things like twitching and loss of focus. However, these things began to turn into bigger problems, all the way from talking to herself to sometimes asking me weird questions. I could only assume that she had some sort of disorder and remembered feeling sympathy toward her. The first night I met Luna was when both of my parents had their anniversary and another time where they both had work. I'd say these tics didn't arise until the third visit of babysitting where I started to take notice. But the more she babysat me, the worse the tics would get. It wasn't until one night, though, where she did something that really pushed the limit. It was Valentine's Day of 2014, and my parents had gone out in the city for a nice dinner. This meant that I would be home with Luna until they got back. For the first hour, she helped me with my homework, and then we played a game. Things went well for the most part, and even though I barely interacted with her, I wasn't rude. I remember giving her a hard time when it was my bedtime that night. It was stupid of me, but keep in mind, I was an 11-year-old boy that didn't want to sleep. Eventually, however, I ended up complying and went to sleep without any problems. Looking back, however, I'd say I slept for a good few hours or so before I awoke to my bedroom door being opened. Thinking it was just a draft, I thought nothing of it and went back to sleep. However, that was when I hear my door open a little more and there was someone standing in the corner of my room. The figure then slowly walks over toward me, coming to a complete stop. At first, I couldn't see who it was, but as my eyes adjusted to the darkness, my light from my nightlight revealed Luna standing at the edge of my bed. I turn on my light and Luna immediately apologizes, telling me she's sorry and that she tends to sleepwalk. In her hand was one of my dad's power drills with the battery taken out. She went on with more excuses while trying to tell two separate stories about why she had it. Of course, being only 11, I had my suspicions, but it wasn't enough to see her as a threat. Later that night, my parents had come home and paid her. It wasn't until the next morning where I woke up and told my parents about Luna and what she did. They, of course, flip out and attempted to call Luna multiple times. My mom had also found empty bottles of her prescription medication gone. However, Luna denies any wrongdoing, and police couldn't actually do anything since she technically didn't commit a crime. It all makes no sense, and it does until this day. Luna never babysat for me again after that, and I hope I never see or hear from her again. I still will never know for sure what she was planning on doing with that power drill, and it still haunts me from time to time.
A I'm a 17-year-old girl who would babysit for a family I knew well. My younger sister was friends with the little boy from the family. We'll call him Chris for privacy reasons. I was really close with Chris's younger sister, Lily, which is the main reason their mother had asked me to babysit for them. I was honestly excited, as I really enjoyed spending time with Lily, and Chris too. Their mom was going out to dinner with friends, and she wouldn't be home until much later in the night. The night of babysitting approached, and everything had been fine. I'd been playing some Minecraft with the two of them for quite a while, and later ordered a pizza for us all to share. Eventually 9 p.m. approached, and it was the kids' bedtime. The excitement must have wiped them out, because they didn't fight me at all on the curfew. Once they were both asleep in their rooms, I sat on the couch in the living room and watched Netflix. Behind the living room was the staircase leading to the upstairs, so from where I was sitting, I could see if someone went upstairs. I was about halfway into an episode of my show when I then heard footsteps coming from down the stairs, assuming it was either Chris or Lily. I called out both of their names. No answer. I had guessed I either imagined it, or it was just one of them getting up to use the bathroom or something. I continued to watch my show, until I saw something in the reflection of the grandfather clock right next to the TV. There was a faint outline of a little girl leaning over the railing of the stairs. I was relaxed initially, as I figured it was just Lily who had woken up. I turned from the couch to look at the stairs, only to be met with an empty staircase. There was nobody there. I whipped my head back around to face the grandfather clock, and the reflection was gone. I felt my stomach plummet, and my heartbeat started to spike. Unnerved, I paused the TV and looked back at the staircase. Nothing. Maybe the reflection had just been from the TV and I had been mistaken. That was the only plausible explanation. The only way I was going to find out for sure, though, is if I checked both kids. Reluctantly, I got up and I walked up the staircase. I opened the door to Chris's room to find him sound asleep. I then made my way over to Lily's room, only to find her asleep as well. I walked further into her room just to double check if she was really fully asleep, and she was. My heart still racing, I was simply left confused. What the hell had I seen in the reflection if Lily was genuinely asleep? I turned to leave the room, only to stop dead in my tracks. There was a girl standing in the hallway. A girl who definitely wasn't Lily. She was sickeningly pale and wearing a white nightgown. I felt like my heart was going to come up my throat. Frozen in fear, it took a few seconds to come back to reality and then slam the door and lock it. I just stood there leaning against the door for a solid minute, heart racing, breathing heavy. That's when I then heard a knock on the door, and I jumped, screaming bloody murder. "Hey, it's just me," I heard Chris say from the other side of the door. A huge wave of relief then washed over me, and I opened the door. He had just stared at me, watching me in this unnerved state, with wide eyes and a concerned look. "What's wrong?" he asked me. Lily had woken up as well, sitting up in bed with a confused expression. I didn't want to scare either of them, so I lied. "I was just watching a scary movie downstairs when I came up to check on you guys, and I guess I was just caught off guard. Sorry for waking you." They both went back to bed, and I returned back downstairs to try and become calm again. I resumed my TV show. I was reaching the end when I suddenly had the urge to look in the reflection once again. Big mistake. I looked back, only to see the clear face of a young girl. The one from the hallway. I paused my show immediately and sprung off the couch. I sprinted out of the house and went out to my car, locking the doors. With shaking hands, I called my mom and then told her everything that happened. She sounded skeptical, and I'm still unsure to this day if she believes me, but she then insisted that I don't leave Chris or Lily alone. I really didn't want to leave them, but I didn't want to be in the house with this ghost either. After talking on the phone, my mom agreed to stay on the phone with me while I stayed there until their mother had come back home. After that night, their mother had asked me to babysit again, but I turned her down politely. It's not that I didn't like the kids. There was just no way in hell I was going to deal with that again. I had decided to do some research on the history of the house to see if I was simply delusional, or if there was in fact a paranormal presence in the house. And to my horror, I'd found an article about the house where a little girl had passed away from pneumonia. She had passed away in what was currently Lily's room, and it was the same exact face that I'd seen in the reflection of the grandfather clock. Hell no.
Babysitting wasn't the job that I had imagined having while I was a senior in high school. I was paid a decent rate by the hour for watching kids that only needed to have an adult around while their parents were out. I know exactly what you're thinking. Why would you willingly waste your time watching children when you could have been working retail or some other halfway decent job? Am I close? Well, as you can imagine, the majority of kids I've looked after were happy, normal children, but my sister's children... Let me get to that. Here's a little background just to help you better understand why I don't foresee myself having children anytime soon, if ever. I'm a male and a social outcast at that. I was 16 when my mom told me that I'd be babysitting for my older sister. Naturally, I shrugged it off as it were no big deal because, I mean, what's the worst that could happen, right? My sister needed to go out of town on a business trip for 2 days, which then caused my mom to decide that I was the right candidate for the job. I learned very quickly that kids are hungry literally every 5 minutes, and they have no respect for the babysitter, and they are totally out of control without their parents around. That was a bummer. Kids are perceived as sweet, innocent, and all-around pure, yet I have first-hand experience on just how truly creepy some kids can be. I had been around my nieces and nephews dozens of times before, so there wasn't any reason for me to think that they were a bit peculiar, aside from the fact that I walked in on Nat, short for Natalie, attempting to sacrifice her sister to the devil in order to bargain for immortality by shoving Lux's hand into a blender. Luckily, I was able to pry her away from the blender before she could turn it on. I had been watching them for less than 20 minutes when that incident occurred. Fast forward to this first afternoon, the kids were playing in the toy room, so I decided to watch television before doing my homework. I was in the middle of a funny movie when Mike cut the side of my neck with scissors. He drew a pentagram on the floor with ketchup, chanted something in a language that I didn't recognize, they probably made it up, and locked Jay in the basement. Tony was the good kid who explained that Mike was trying to summon a demon. Someone that is close to the devil so that he could bargain Jay's soul for immortality. Mike angrily hissed at me when the plan didn't work. I swear to God, those freaking creepypastas they watch really don't help them. It was then that I learned that they had a crazy obsession with vampires. The need to be immortal and trying to draw blood from people is their way to fulfill the desire to be like the people in movies or books. These kids were actually trying to figure out ways that they could become immortal without having to stay so small for all of eternity. I thought that was a bit unhealthy. I still have no idea how the internet or horror movies, when their parents weren't looking, really activated this, but I'm honestly still scared of what could have happened. Nat was the eldest child. She was the bad influence on her siblings. She was the entire reason why everything went down on the second night. I was studying for a calculus test that I had the next day. The kids were supposed to be playing in the backyard, which was the mistake. All I really remember about studying is that I had been exhausted from chasing around those brats the night before because I ended up falling asleep at the kitchen table. I woke up sometime in the afternoon with my hands and feet tied to a metal pipe in the basement while my deranged nieces and nephews stood over me with a weird look in their eyes. I struggled for a good 10 minutes to free myself from that stupid rope as they chanted some weird language again. I assumed that they were really trying to sacrifice me, however, I was relieved when I saw one of the cats knock a candle off the windowsill. The carpet and lengthy silk curtains immediately caught fire, which caused the kids to untie me. We rushed out of the house and to safety just in time to watch the house burn, literally to the ground. I stood motionless for what seemed like hours before eventually the police were called by the neighbors. I called my mom to come get the kids before being questioned by police for over 3 hours. The detective that was interrogating me surely was about to arrest me, but The fire department later ruled that the fire was an accident. My sister angrily barged into my room once she arrived home and informed me that I was no longer allowed to babysit her kids again, and literally almost beat me senseless if it wasn't for my parents stopping her fury. I cried tears of joy at the news and never babysat again. I tried to explain the story to both the detectives and my family, though my nieces and nephews' stories all apparently corroborated against my own, and there was nothing I could do. Needless to say, I never visited their family again, both by being shunned and by choice. Natalie and the other kids all grew out of the vampire phase from what I heard once they hit junior high, and acquired less creepy, less dangerous interests. I'm 28 years old now, incredibly far away from my family, married to the most amazing woman, yet I still refuse to think about having children. You never know what they're gonna get into.